All right. Welcome this morning to our Faith Talks training. We are almost halfway through what we're going to be doing this summer. And we are on session four, and we'll be covering today the third value, value number three. And if you're listening to this on tape, you want to turn your tape off, pause the tape, and answer that skill development question that you see in your notes. Now, our scripture passage that we have been working from is this particular passage, Colossians chapter 4, verses 2 through 6. And I'm going to read it again. We won't spend much time looking into it in a in-depth way, but we're going to cover the passage itself, and then we'll move through this. Now, this is a passage in the New Testament that actually addresses lay evangelism or lay conversation between lost people and or Christians, insiders, and lost people or outsiders. So let's look at the passage again and just keep this in the back of our minds as we go through the training. It reads as follows: devote yourselves to prayer, keeping alert in it with an attitude of thanksgiving, praying at the same time for us as well, that God will open up to us a door for the Word, so that we may speak forth the mystery of Christ, for which I've also been in prison, that I may make it clear in the way I ought to speak. Conduct yourselves with wisdom toward outsiders, making the most of the opportunity, and let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. Now, what we've done, the training has been laid out so that it links back to this passage of Scripture, and we have six values that we're looking at in the training process that we're going through now. We've covered the first two, and we are as far as value number three today, but let me go back over the first two that go like this. Value number one: we are not called to bring everyone we know to Jesus, but we're called to bring Jesus to everyone we know. The Scripture makes it very clear that we are to be a fragrance of Christ in every place to those that are saved and to those that are perishing, and that through us, God manifests Himself to the world around us. So we are to take Jesus with us wherever we go, and that means we got to be on our toes. Our lives need to be clean and in a repentant state so that the fragrance of Christ does manifest itself through us with great freedom. The second value we looked at last week is this one. We aim to fully understand both the gospel and the people we talk to before trying to introduce the good news to them. Now, past traditional evangelism approaches have done a good job of training people how to talk, have not put much emphasis on how to listen. And so that needs to be balanced if we're going to be effective in today's world, where people do not want to be imposed upon by any other person's views. And so they want a chance to express and a chance to say what they're thinking. And so the listening piece of soul winning and also the speaking piece needs to be balanced. And what we talked about last week is we need to balance gospel urgency with people sensitivity. We need to put those two things together if we're going to reach people in today's world. And now value number three looks like this, and this will be the topic we'll cover today. Value number three looks like this: we recognize the need to expand beyond gospel presentations to gospel conversations. In other words, if we are going to get to know the people we're trying to share the gospel with, then that means we have to get into conversations with them to be able to explore them as people so they can explore us, and a bond of connection and trust can be built between you. So we need to move beyond the gospel presentations to gospel conversations. Now, by way of discussion, I want you to wrestle with this a little bit and answer this question at your tables. In your opinion, what is the difference between the two? What is the difference between gospel presentations and gospel conversations? You guys have some interactions at your table on that topic, and we'll come back to it in just a few minutes. If you're listening to this on tape, pause the tape and wrestle with that question, please. Okay, let's pull the discussion together, and we'll look into this question a little more deeply. Value number four centers around the idea of moving beyond gospel presentations to gospel conversations. Now, notice that we're not saying here that we're going to do gospel conversations instead of gospel presentations. That's not the point at all. The point of what we're saying is The gospel presentations need to be encapsulated within a gospel conversation to be effective. So what training you've been taught in the past about how to share your faith and how to talk versus listen is not invaluable or not, it's not something that's obsolete, but you do have to move beyond the presentation mode into the idea of a conversation. Now, let's distinguish between these two. Presentations versus conversations, in your opinion, what's the difference? All right, I'm going to give you some insight on this, and you probably thought a lot of it, thought of a lot of yourselves at your table. Now, then, what I'm going to put up here will not necessarily correspond to your notes because I edited after your notes were done. So you might have to cross some things out and add some things in, but just be patient with me on that. All right, first of all, gospel presentations versus gospel conversations. What's the difference between the two? All right, first of all, gospel presentations obviously are one-way communications. Conversations are two-way communications. One-way versus two-way communication. Secondly, gospel presentations kind of involve an indirect eye contact, where gospel conversations involve a direct eye contact. When you're talking to people one-to-one in a conversation, you tend to make eye contact and look at them when you're talking to them. Again, in the presentation, gospel presentation, the speaker's active and the listener is passive, but in the gospel conversation, both parties are active. Both parties are engaged. You cannot have a conversation by yourself. Both parties have to involve and participate themselves, or it's you're back to a one-way conversation. Gospel presentations are a monologue, or tend to be, and gospel conversations are a dialogue. Monologue versus dialogue. In presentations, the feeling that comes across is that we're talking at people, and in conversations, we're talking with people. There's a big difference today between feeling like someone's talking at you versus someone that's talking with you. And then also the speaker-listener pressure. The speaker's under the pressure to remember what he's or she is trying to say and make sure that they make it clear. And the listener's under the pressure to pay attention and hear what's being said to them so that they don't get distracted and lose track of the presentation. Whereas the conversation, there's a shared pressure. The listener and the speaker are both changing roles, and the pressure shifts around a little bit so that it's shared by both parties, not so much pressure on just one. Also, the presentation tends to be formal, where the conversation tends to be casual. Sort of changes the feel of what's happening there. And then also, presentations require an element of preparation. If you're going to present something to someone, you have to prepare yourself to do that, whereas conversations tend to be much more spontaneous and not so much preparation-oriented, so that they have a very in-the-moment feel versus a presentation which many times feels scripted. And then lastly, the presentation is a little bit unnatural, whereas the conversation is more natural. Most of us know how to have conversations, and we've done that so many times at this age and stage of life that it's a natural experience to do that. Now, when I say presentations are unnatural, the reason why I'm using that word is because surveys have been done today of people's greatest fears. And most people's greatest fear is talking in front of a group of people. They fear that more than anything. The fear, the idea of failing in front of a group of people and being humiliated as a result of that. So when we're doing presentations, that's a form of public speaking, and it's a little bit nerve-wracking to do it. So what it does is it puts people on edge. And when we get into a gospel presentation and we're a little bit nervous about what we're saying and we're trying to recall what we're trying to say, you lose the authenticity of the exchange. And in today's world, authenticity is everything. So anything that detracts from the authenticity of the encounter is going to detract from the power of what you're trying to say. So here's the difference between the two. And now with these differences and this contrast in mind, let me ask you this question. What is the greatest evidence today that we are moving toward a conversational culture, moving back toward it? We've moved away from it, now we're moving back toward it. What is the greatest symbol in our culture today that we are trying to get back to being conversational people? Pardon?
Social
Yeah, but that's kind of detracting in some ways from conversations. And what's the symbol I'm looking for? Well, they're also detracting from conversations. The social media is not helping conversations. They're taking away from it. We'll talk about that later. But what's on every street corner in our towns now? Coffee shops. And the reason why you go into a coffee shop and spend $4 on a cup of coffee most often is because you want to sit down and talk to somebody. And that's how we do it. So when Starbucks got started, the founder of Starbucks was asked the question, you think people are going to pay $3 for a cup of coffee when you go down to Waffle House and get it for 99 cents? And he said, we aren't selling coffee. We're selling ambiance. We're selling an environment where people can have an experience of connecting with other people. So yeah, we pay $4 for a cup of coffee today and don't think much about it. That's one vice I never got into. So Starbucks has never gotten a dime of my money. But if you're a coffee person, it costs money to do that. Now, let's get into this idea of conversation and why and how conversation is important today. Now, let me first introduce a thought to you that you probably thought about but maybe never worked out in your mind. I want to try to help you do that today. And that is one of the reasons why we're shifting from presentation to conversation is because the communication stance that we have in our world today is that everyone sees themselves on equal footing with everybody else. Everybody's opinion matters. Now, back in the day, 40, 50, 60 years ago, in the Christian community, we're all used to going to church, and that's what we call large group communication. And we're used to going to church where the person that's speaking to us in a monologue is coming from a position of authority, and he can say things to us that are very direct. He's free to insult us. That's called stepping on toes. And we take that in those church settings. And there's a certain authoritative tone to what's being said in the large group settings we call church. And here's a picture and image of someone who's talking in a large group. And you kind of see the one-to-many stance that's there. And the person is talking with some enthusiasm and some zeal and with authority. Now, let's move from the large group to the mid-sized group, which is a typical Sunday school class. And this tends to be a little bit more interactive, but you still have the monologue going where someone's talking to a group of people. And then notice the change from this group to this one. Then you get into a small group, and here the communication interactions change dramatically in that this is not one to many or one to a few, but this is a group of people that are all speaking and listening to one another, and they're sitting not shoulder to shoulder, but they're sitting face to face. And that changes the dynamic dramatically. But even more, watch this. Watch the transition from this communication stance to this one. Now, this is a conversation stance. And let me put up another slide for those of you that are of the male gender so you feel included. So we got ladies talking to ladies and men talking to men. Now, here's the big mistake that we've made as Christians when we go out and try to do evangelism one-to-one. We try to use the communication authoritarianism of the large group preacher in our one-to-one conversations, and we shut people down. And if we think we can go out into the culture and use that same authoritative tone with people we're trying to talk to, you're going to build resistance and not receptivity. So you have to make the compartmentalization correct in your minds that certain communication stances fit certain settings that don't fit others. And when we're talking about you guys sharing your faith with people that you know, that's largely conversational, and it requires an entirely different tone in the way that you communicate what you're trying to say to people. Does that make sense? So you have to distinguish these things and not try to go out and be a Billy Graham or a Dr. Youssef when you're having a private conversation with somebody, because people will feel preached at and they will politely shut you down. So it has to be conversational, interactive, and the tone is very different, very, very different. Now, let's talk a little bit about this question. Can you think of any point-by-point gospel presentations anywhere in the Scripture where somebody kind of went through a four-point or five-point presentation of the gospel? Think of any examples of that. Are there conversations in the Bible around the gospel? Yes. Are they in this organized point-by-point kind of package form? You just don't see it. It's not there. Now, here's what you do see. And notice the subtle difference between these two things. Instead of point-by-point gospel presentations in the Bible, what you do see are conversations that integrate aspects of the gospel into the conversation on an as-needed basis. Hence, we call these gospel conversations. So the model that we have in the Bible is not this 5-point, 4-point track approach, but rather what you see in the Scripture are people having conversations with other people, and the circumstances dictate the content of the gospel that's brought into it. So the circumstances dictate what's said and how it's said. So we need to understand the value of this and make that shift in the way we're talking to people from a gospel presentation to a conversation following the models that we see in the Scripture. The examples of these are John chapter 3, Jesus talking to Nicodemus. Jesus does take a fairly direct stance with Nicodemus because he's a religious leader of that day and he thinks he knows a lot. He doesn't know as much as he thinks he does. And so Jesus is trying to point out to him that he doesn't know as much as he thinks he does. The woman at the well, Jesus takes a very different stance with that lady. She's a Samaritan woman. They're out in public at a well. Not only did Jews not talk to Samaritans back then, but men didn't talk to women in public privately. And so Jesus crossed several cultural barriers there in that conversation. And he talks to her in an appealing way. And we'll talk about that as we go through this. And then also in Mark 10, Jesus has a conversation with a guy who comes up, who runs up to him, kneels down in front of him, and he says, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" And he's coming across as a very sincere person. And then Jesus brings the law, the Ten Commandments, to bear upon his covetous heart and exposes his covetous heart as a wealthy man, that his money is his God. And when Jesus tells him he's got to sell everything and go give everything to the poor and follow him, he walks off with his face very sad. So all of those are conversations, but the content of what's said in which Jesus had these conversations, it's all different. There's no standard package 3-point gospel or 4-point that he goes through. So what we want to do is know the gospel well enough that we can change up how we say it depending on the circumstances of the people that we're talking to. So the aim is to know the gospel fully and know the people you're talking to fully and be able to think on your feet when you're talking to people. All right, let's go now to this idea of a conversation. And let's try to put some thoughts together on what we mean exactly when we're talking about a conversation, a gospel conversation. All right, first of all, the word conversation is a compound word which is made up of these two short little three-word, four or five-word letters. Con means with, and versare means turn. So what it seems to imply is that conversations are dialogues in which we each take our turn talking with one another, which means, again, that it's not dominated by one person, but rather it's a shared interaction. So the implication of the word itself is that we're to take turns sharing life with one another. Now, let's keep going. We won't spend too much time on that idea, but let's talk about the value of the conversations in general. Conversation is the foundation for connection with other people. How do we build connection with the people around us? Well, we have conversations with others. And conversations become the tie that binds our hearts to one another. Through meaningful conversations, we build connections with each other. Now, that's true of friendships, it's true of the people we work with, and it's true of our marriages. And what happens in marriage, when marriages start to wind down a bit, is when conversations stop happening. And not only do they stop happening, but instead of not talking at all, where you don't have good, healthy conversation, arguments come in place of conversation. So now we have major disagreements in marriage. And when that becomes the predominant way that we talk to each other through argument, then the marriage is at a tipping point. You're going to have to right that or fix that because you're destroying the connection between yourself and another person. So when argument gets substituted for conversation, that's not healthy. So this is something we all have to work at. But conversation is the foundation for connection with people. So all of us who need to be connected to others need to master this fine art of conversation. Meaningful conversation is the cure for the rampant cultural disease of isolation. The rampant cultural disease of isolation. Now, isolation is a condition that is intensifying in our world, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit further, but isolation has a lot to do with much of the trouble that we're facing. And so conversation is the substitute for that. So if we want to neutralize that sense of isolation, Then we have conversations. Sometimes we, in our marriages, we feel isolated in our marriages because we're not conversation. We're not conversing with each other. We've got to work those things out. So here in our culture, we pay therapists when we talk to somebody on a deep level. But in talking cultures, where people talk to one another as a way of life, depression is really just another word in a dictionary. Depression is rampant in American culture, not so much at all in cultures where people don't have iPhones, social media, they don't have automobiles to get around in, and they interact and they talk with each other. So the isolation that we're experiencing today is taking a huge toll upon the way we relate to one another, not to mention it's plunging people into depression and those kinds of things. But it's also profoundly inhibiting the way we try to share the gospel with lost people. Because we're barging in with our gospel presentations, moving too quickly, short-circuiting the conversational aspect of sharing our faith, and we are neutralizing our efforts without really intending to do so. So the value of this is very important. Now, look at this question with me. We're going to spend some time now talking about the gradual encroachment of isolation in our culture and the effects of it. Suicide rates in the last 20 years have risen 25% to 30% here in the United States, and school violence is now the new norm. I can't remember the exact figure, but the last time I saw it, I think in the last 20 years, there have been over 300 school shootings. Over 300. Now, what is at the root of this behavior? What is driving this suicide and this school violence? If you read the accounts of the people that survived the school violence, and if you also pick up on the clues that suicidal victims leave, if they do bother to leave any, most of the stuff goes back to one single thing, and that's isolation. It's isolation, and it's taken an enormous social toll on us. Okay, let's look at this in a little bit more depth. All right, we've had a couple of celebrities recently. Michael mentioned them from the pulpit last Sunday who've taken their lives. Now, I want you to, I've taken the time to get into their stories a little bit and see if I can understand them and notice how isolation and suicide runs together in these high-profile suicides. This guy named Anthony Bourdain, is that the right way to say it? Bourdain? Thank you. All right. This celebrity was a chef and host of CNN's food and travel-focused Parts Unknown television series. He hung himself in a French hotel room while he was filming one of his shows. And this was disclosed by CNN a week ago, this past Friday. This is the second high-profile suicide celebrity in this week. Bourdain was 61 years old, and this is what he said about one of his last interviews about his life. He said, "I wake up in the morning looking at beautiful vistas and doing interesting things, but the truth of the matter is that I'm alone most of the time." Now, here's a man who had conquered all of the goals he set for his life, and in his own words, he says, "I live a pretty charmed life here," but he's also living a life of deep aloneness, and right in the middle of a busy work schedule, his coworker comes to his hotel room and finds that he's hung himself. And the comments of the people that knew him said, we knew he was capable of some very interesting things because he had drugs in his background, but we never thought he would do this. The other high-profile suicide we saw just a few days before Bourdain was Kate Spade. And she was a fashion designer in her mid-50s, found dead in a New York City apartment on Tuesday morning. She lived in Upper East Manhattan, I think was the side of New York she lived on. And she hung herself and was found by the housekeeper on Park Avenue. And in reading the articles that described her life and the tragic loss, I included in this a quote from a friend, one of her friends, and this is what one of her friends said. "Kate closed the doors in 1998, 20 years ago. Kate closed the doors in 98 on her pain so no one could see it." So she was living out her pain and isolation alone, and it took a toll, and she took her life. She was happily married for many years, had one child, one daughter, And she started getting creative, creating lines of handbags and stuff. And she, her husband marketed it. She created it, and her husband marketed it. And they sold it to a high-profile wholesaler for $92 million. She had all the money she could ever imagine. And she had everything money could buy. But in her mid-50s, she takes her life. Another story is this gentleman who was kind of before most of our time, Ernest Hemingway. This gentleman was 61 years old when he died. He was born in 1899 in July, and he died on July 2nd, 1961. He committed suicide. On a sunny Sunday morning in Idaho, I think it was, he put a shotgun to his head, and he took his life. He was the son of a Christian mother who talked to him about the gospel throughout much of his life, and at a certain point, he rejected it. And he lived a life that was kind of a man's man. He was into things like bullfighting and all the wine, women, and song that you can imagine. He had all that going for him. And then he was a famous author, a brilliant, brilliant man. But on a sunny Sunday morning, he ends his life. Now, here's a quote from him. Listen to what he says about his life. This high-flying, high-rolling man who had it all, brilliance, brains, money, prestige. He was famous. He says, "I've lived in a vacuum that is as lonely as a radio tube when the batteries are dead and there's no current to plug into." Now, what you can see through that quote is the intense pain of his isolation, which drove him to self-destruct in the way that he did. Now, there's been a recent study on loneliness, and it's trending the wrong way. This study found out the following. Nearly 50% of the respondents to this survey reported that they feel alone or left out always or sometimes. So close to a majority, or right at a majority of people, are feeling isolation on a fairly deep level most of the time. 54% said they always or sometimes feel that no one really knows them well. Evidence that conversation in our culture has been marginalized. 40% said they lack companionship, that their relationships aren't meaningful, and that they're isolated from others. So these are people that have relationships in their lives, but they're touching elbows or touching shoulders and not touching hearts. So there's no meaningful connection there, even though they've got people in their lives. Study goes on to say, which group of struggles more with loneliness than the other? The two groups they tested were seniors that are 72 years old and above, or those Generation Z, which is 20 years and below. Which of these groups of people are experiencing the most intense loneliness? Now, if you look at this logically, seniors that are moving into the more isolated years of their lives when they don't have the energy to get out and go like they used to in the Generation Z group, which is the younger kids that have the world at their feet, automobiles, iPhones, and all the social media, you would think that it's the seniors that are experiencing this. Survey said seniors had an overall loneliness score of 38.6, and Generation Z has an overall loneliness score of 48.3. So it's a full 10 points higher in the younger generation. Now, we've got all the social media coming at us from all different directions, and we can talk to somebody on the other side of the world with just a click of a button. But that, ironically, is only intensifying the sense of isolation that young people have. It's crazy. So here's another quote from another author. I kind of like the way he says this. He says, "We are lonesome animals, and we spend all of our life trying to be less lonesome. One of our ancient methods is to tell a story, begging the listener to say and to feel, yes, that's the way it is, or at least that is the way that I feel it is to be." So what he's saying here is that we're lonely by nature. We tend to live our lives trying to deal or address that loneliness, fill our lives up with people so we feel some connection. And one of the ways that we neutralize isolation in our lives is we share our stories, and we're just begging for somebody to listen to our story and say, yeah, I've been there, done that. I've experienced the same thing. Yes, that's what it feels like. And that touch of affirmation neutralizes the pain of loneliness in our lives. And I think he said that very well. So loneliness is rampant. Let me give you another survey. And I'll let you interact with them for just a minute. A large group of Christian people were surveyed. These are believers, people of faith, were surveyed years ago who were struggling with depression. And they divided the group into three categories, and they prescribed this type of approach to their depression for them. Number one, they gave people, the first group received counseling. The second group prayed with a support person who instructed them how to pray and then prayed with them. And then the third group was just sent home and told to pray alone. Now, what were the results of these three approaches to help people deal with their depression? And again, keep in mind, these are people of faith. These are Christian people, or at least claim to be. All right, here's the survey, what the survey said. Those who received counseling, had somebody to talk to about what they were struggling with, showed a 50% improvement. Those who prayed with a support person and in a sense had a one-to-one connection and conversation and prayed to God about what they were struggling with, they showed a 85% improvement. But those who were sent home to pray alone and just ask God to help them with their depression, survey said, zero improvement. Zero improvement. So you can see from this that the destructive power of isolation is eroding the social health of the culture that we live in, and therefore conversation, which is the basis for our connection with people, and conversation is what neutralizes isolation, we've kind of lost that. We swung too far away from it, and now we're swinging back toward that. That's why gospel conversations, not gospel presentations, fit the culture much better today. So we got to make this subtle adjustment. Okay, now, isolation drives depression and violence. We know that that's pretty much true. Secondly, one of the greatest needs in today's high-tech, low-touch culture is meaningful conversation. Not just conversation, but meaningful conversation. Conversation is the building block of our connection with people, as we've said. Meaningful conversation creates heart connection. When we enjoy heart connection with others, that leads us to reveal ourselves. And when we get into meaningful conversations in which we can share ourselves in our lives, that negates lonely isolation. That is what negates isolation. So here's the opportunity that the church really has to address this. All right, from a biblical standpoint, this is a general verse that just addresses how we interact with people, and of course it applies to conversations. And it says, "Do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them upon your neck and write them upon the tablet of your heart. So you will find favor and good reputation in the sight of God and men." Now notice how that verse prescribes in this really simple way how we can have meaningful connection both with God and with the people around us. And that is to have our interactions with people follow two basic tracks, kindness and truth. And the train of life runs most smoothly when it runs upon those two rails evenly, balancing kindness and truth. And then also in the New Testament, it says speaking the truth in love, which is the same idea. And remember, we said last week that Jesus is filled with grace and truth. So you see the parallel between these realities, communicating with others along these lines, how Jesus did it so effectively, and it was one of the keys to his winsomeness because the common people of his day are the people that flocked to him. Now, by way of summary, here's what we're saying when we're advocating gospel conversations rather than presentations. Number one, society's temporary answer to isolation is conversation. Let's go get a cup of coffee and talk about it. All right? The church's permanent solution to isolation is the gospel. Because if we can introduce people to the gospel, and the gospel gets people reconnected to God, it's the absence of God in their lives that's at the root of their deep isolation. So if we can win people to the gospel and reconnect them with God, then we have solved their isolation on the most deep core level, not only for today, but for eternity. And so the gospel goes right to the issue of isolation. Now the ultimate answer then to isolation is gospel conversions that come through gospel conversations. if you put all those pieces together. We recognize the need to expand beyond gospel presentations to gospel conversations which penetrate people's isolation, their spiritual isolation, and their personal isolation. Now, here's the main thing I want you to take away from this presentation today, and that is this. The goal of gospel conversations is isolation infiltration. In other words, what we want to do is get on a wavelength with people where we have listened attentively, given them a chance to express themselves, to be themselves, to express themselves, and we develop a deep connection with them, and we allow those relationships to progress to the point where we have penetrated their sense of isolation by being a friend to them as people, but then also, hopefully, building that bridge of trust so that when we get into their lives, we can then point out to them the ultimate solution to their isolation, which is reconnection with God. So that's the direction we're trying to go. So to get there, if we do gospel presentations without gospel conversations, it's the rough equivalent of just hurling gospel grenades at people and letting them blow up and the pieces fly in all directions, and then we wonder why the resistance that we encounter is there. Because we're not connecting deeply enough with people to be able to bring the gospel into their isolation, which is their basic root issue. So as we talked about last week, we need to slow the train down and offload some of this heavy gospel urgency pressure that is pushing us into conversations that quickly result into gospel presentations that are done prematurely because they end up detracting from the goal that we're trying to attain with the people. Does that make sense? Kind of have a picture of it. Now, I want you just to wrestle with that, and we'll be off next Sunday, and we'll come back in 2 weeks. And as you move into the July months where people are taking vacations, class is not over. Don't get ready to go yet because we've got some more stuff to do. But next Sunday we're off, and then we'll, as you move into July vacation period, just remember that all of this is going to be on the website so you can listen to the presentations that you miss. Now, let's go to the 60-day experiment or the practical side of this. You were given a sheet of paper that's in your folders, and you can look at those folders. And once again, remember that there are four action steps that we're asking you to take as you move through the training. The first one is to be praying every day for God to give you opportunities to connect with people. Be reading 3 to 5 pages in some book on evangelism, and I've still got some books up here if you want to look at these. If you don't have your book yet, we have some copies of the Conversation Evangelism book if you didn't get that. Then also connecting with people by just talking to people, saying hello to them, and stop what you're doing and just listen to them. Give them an opportunity to go beyond the cursory, how you doing, fine, and you just keep going. But slow yourself down, ask the question with intentionality, and allow people a chance to respond to it, like they'll really tell you how they're doing. Now this week, week 4, is where you want to start to try to find ways to be a blessing to the people around you. Through your conversations, you'll find out what's happening in their lives and look for ways that you can do meaningful things to them to be a blessing to them. And this is all part of just being a servant to the people that you're trying to talk to, which is how Jesus did what he did. And let me just share one quick incident that I've had, one experience I had over the last couple of weeks. There's a lady that I've started to have contact with in the real estate business because I've gotten into landlording of late. And yes, my hair's going to get gray much faster, I know. But anyway, this one particular agent that I've been dealing with is just the absolute epitome of total competence. And this is a lady who's mastered her trade. She has so much poise in the way she does what she does. She handles hard questions. She feels those so quickly and with such calm, it just fascinates me. And when I ask her for something, she gets it back to me in less than 5 minutes. And I've only met her once, and we've had this internet exchange going on. And the other day, I sent her an email and asked her for something, and she had it back to me in 2 minutes. I mean, it was right there. So I was so pleased at how quickly she got it back to me that I sent an email back to her, and I said, "You are the absolute best." And she emails back and says, "Oh, that the world would know." just full of female vanity. You know, oh, that everybody would recognize this about me. So I said, listen, why don't you give me your boss's phone number and email, and I'll call him. And I'll happily affirm what a great job you do. And so she said, oh, sure. So she sends me the email. And a week goes by, and I'm getting snowed under, and I'm remembering, I promised this lady I would send this recommendation. So 10:30 at night, I get on my little iPad, and I send this glowing recommendation to this lady's boss. And I went on and on and on about everything that I just said to you and what a great job she does, and she's such a credit to your organization. If you're thinking about getting her a promotion, give her the promotion now. And if she's up for a raise, give her the maximum raise you can give her. I mean, the lady deserves every bit of it. I really went overboard. And 10 minutes later, I get an email from her. I send it to the boss, and the boss sends it around to the whole team and is wide-eyed about this recommendation that had just been given to one of his team members. So she sends me an email and says, I just got the email you sent to the boss. He sent it to the whole team, and he is just wide-eyed with excitement. And then she types like 15 thank yous into the email. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So anyway, that was my little one way to be a blessing to somebody who had, I thought, done good things to help me do what I'm trying to do, and she deserved that. Now, there's all kinds of people around you that need that type of servant, love touch, affirmation. You know, most of us don't work for a paycheck. One good word from the boss or a customer is good for a month for most of us, if somebody can just remember to do those little things. So as you're having conversations with people, look for very simple, practical ways that you can affirm the value of people and you serve them. And let's come across as people who recognize that everyone's made in the image of God. Everyone has something good about them. Let's look for those things. Let's find people doing something right or good, and let's affirm that. And that's a way of just serving people. And again, it infiltrates people's isolation where they wonder, I'm working my brains out. Does anybody really notice? And when somebody steps in the way that I was able to do in a very simple way, that means a lot to people. So that was my way of connecting with people in a servant role. So I'll just suggest that to you as something to think about. So this week, look for ways to be a blessing to people that you're trying to start conversations and relationships with. Does that make sense? All right, now, one more thing I want to do today, and that is I want to show you today how to present the gospel in 10 seconds or less in contemporary language. And we were talking today about conversation, but we're talking about gospel conversation, so I want you to understand the gospel in the language of people on the street. Now, we speak different languages in church. We've got insider stained glass church language. And we need to understand that people outside the church don't speak the same language. They are on a different frequency, different wavelength altogether. And what I want to do this morning is I want to give you an example of conversational evangelism, and I'm going to teach you how to share the gospel in 10 seconds or less. I know you don't believe it, but just stay with me here. Now, when you get into conversations with people and you do get to the point where you want to bring the gospel into it, you want to do this conversationally, which means that you want to ask people these four questions. You don't want to give them the answers to the questions. You want to ask the four questions and let them speak to the issue. Then, once they've given you their point of view, you give them yours, which is a conversation. That makes sense? So there's four questions that people wrestle with generally, and they go like this. How did we get here? How did it get so broken? How can it be fixed? And how can I buy in? Now, that last question in particular is millennial language. They want to know how they can buy in. They want to know how something can benefit them, or they're not interested in it. So these are the four questions that generally are rumbling around people's minds. And if they're being honest about it, they will try to answer these. Now, here's the gospel in 10 seconds. Ready? Drum roll, please. Somebody. There you go. All right. Here's the gospel in 10 seconds. Now, we're going to give them the answers to these four questions. And here it is. God set it up. We upset it. Jesus reset it. And now we accept it or reject it. And that takes about 10 seconds to say those things. God set it up. We upset it. Jesus reset it. And we accept it or reject it. And there's the gospel in contemporary language. Now, notice what we just did. We just covered four major themes of the Bible. And these four themes in the Bible summarize the entire message of the 1,700-page Bible that you and I read every day. We just covered creation. We just covered the fall. We just covered redemption and salvation. Those are all the themes that the Bible speak about, and this is a simple way to put it. Does that make sense? All right, now we're gonna practice this a little bit, okay? Now, I'm going to do it for you first. You watch how I do it, and then we're all going to stand up. You get to do it the way that I do it, but y'all can add some dramatic flair, hopefully, to it. We got lots of women in the room. Y'all are drama queens, so help me out, okay? So, first of all, here it is. God set it up. Watch me. God set it up. We upset it. Jesus reset it, and now you either accept it or you reject it. That make sense? All right, let's all stand up. We're going to do it. We're going to do it here. All right, let's do it simple first, and then we'll get dramatic. All right, everybody just watch what I'm doing. Just do it with me. All right, the answer to the four major questions of life are, number one, God set it up. We upset it. Jesus reset it, and now we accept it or reject it. You got it? Simple. Now, we're going to dramatize this, okay? Get a little spontaneous here. All right, first of all, God set it up, and we upset it. Put your hands way down. We upset it. We messed it up. All right, now Jesus reset it, and now we either accept it or we reject it. Or you can do the hands away. All right, is that good? All right, let's try it again. Ready? Come on, guys. Get it going. You're ahead of me, John. All right, here we go. God set it up. We upset it. Jesus reset it. And now we accept it or reject it. All right, turn to somebody you're standing with and do it with each other. Y'all say it to each other. So you remember the words. Okay, let's try it one more time. One more time, and then you've got it. You've got the gospel in 10 seconds or less. You can go out and do it whenever God gives the opportunity. All right, here we go. God set it up. We upset it. Jesus reset it. And now we accept it or reject it. All right, guys, you're on your way. Have a good 2 weeks. We'll see you continue our training with session number 5, concept number 4. Have a good 4th of July week. See you soon.